with the Western supremacy, intense chemistry. Expect the list when we sound the list. Western supremacy, intense chemistry.
Best be aware, new blood starting to drip.
Audio always like scares the shit out of me because, like, I'm not, you know, the best audio guy, but like, I've been pretty lucky so far. And I actually plan to, I got a plan to like build a studio. I'm going to convert the garage into a studio and make something proper because I kind of started off as like just a small thing. And look, it's not massive yet or anything, but it's starting to get like a bit of traction. I'll show you a couple of like numbers.
I'll show you a picture of our garage. That's what we've done.
Yeah. Know better than me. Yeah. So I've been like learning as I go.
Yeah. Oh, it's more my husband than me. But yes, the people who had the house before us, they used it as a home office, and we've walked in and got, and it was the garage.
Yeah.
And we've gone perfect for a studio.
Yeah. So. A couple of things before we start. So basically, if you need a toilet break or anything, it's just straight through there.
Yep.
But if you need to stop for anything, like no dramas, I can edit anything out.
Yep.
What else do I normally tell people at the start? Oh, I normally tell people that I swear a bit.
Yeah.
So it is like an adult's thing.
Well, I was saying to my husband, I'm like, because I genuinely look, go with what's going. I'm like, fuck, it's going to be hard for me not to go straight to your level, because I've listened to a couple of the podcasts. I'm like, oh, I'm going to have to, because, you know, you mirror the people you're with. And
yeah,
I'm like,
I'll
have to try not to.
And look, I just tell people, I don't know if you listen to them already, but basically I tell people, like, I tried not swearing, right, and I felt like fake Ira. So, and look, I'm not bad or anything, but I just give people a heads up, you know, so it doesn't freak them out.
Yeah, no, I'm a potty mouth from way back. That's what I was saying. I'm like, I'm going to have to be careful.
Well, you got to remember, it is basically all of the podcasts are labelled as explicit content. So it's got a rating on it. So I just give people like the heads up, and sometimes we talk about adult stuff. And if you need a break. Oh, and the other thing is, just sort of like, you know, political disclaimer. So I'm actually going to leave this bit in because I normally cut this out, right? But then one of my listeners, I call him Stan, he's my number one fan. He's a truckie. I mean, he listens to them all. He actually messaged me something. Then I realized I'd probably be helpful for people to know, to like listen to the first little bit, because I tell people, right, so basically I'm as pretty much as objective as you can be, right? So I don't really vote Labor or Liberal. I generally vote like Fishers and Shoes Party or Libertarian, right? And basically any questions that I do ask you today, I'm asking you like what you think, not the party. I put a disclaimer on this saying this is not the views of the National Party. This is just me asking Lisa, like, you know, getting to know a candidate, because, you know, doing the long form like this, I think it's quite valuable, because it's very hard for people to actually get a sense of you. And like, even so, you and I've met a couple of times already, and we've started like talking, and then, you know, we get really interrupted by other people. the old 3-minute thing, I know the rule that most like pollies have. So yeah, it's nice to be able to like, you know, sit down and look like, you know, I'm not where's my phone, I'm not like massive or anything. But I'll tell you one thing that's been really interesting about this campaign for me, right, is actually like the access to you guys, and or should I say, like, rather the access, or rather the lack of access to some candidates. And look, I'm not big time or anything, right, but I'll show you, this is just a message, like, don't say it out loud, okay, but this is just a message I sent Adam this morning.
So it's not
massive, right? But as you can see, that's probably why you should do it if you can, because, like I said, I'm not big, but you'll be surprised, kind of thing.
Oh, I listened to it. I was great. I was actually I like Adam. He's a good guy. We're, you know, we're on the same team. We've got a common goal. But I actually really enjoyed listening to his podcast, because it was, you know, I've you know, seen a fair bit of him over the last month, but it was that backstory that I didn't know. I thought that was quite good. I'm actually just going to grab my phone and have it in my lap if you don't mind.
Yeah, just move that out of the way if you want. That's cool. In case someone, you get the bat call from the bat signal.
Well, it's actually, the gnats will probably survive. It's more so my children. So, I've got, they're all out at the moment. So,
So we're probably, probably about an hour and a half. I'll try and keep it moving. So I think that's pretty much the rundown. And then, at the end, I've got something for you as well. So, everyone that comes, I give them like a tray of stuff from the garden. Just because, like, no one gets paid. So I try and, like, give you some nice stuff, and I'll give you some eggs too, the most beautiful eggs you've ever seen. A friend of mine around the corner grows, like, heritage chickens. So they're all different colours and stuff, and the yolks are just, like, amazing.
Awesome. Well, we're out of eggs at the moment, so that will go down.
And they're very expensive, so, yeah. All right, cool. So, yeah, all right, we'll get sort of rolling. And, look, I try and keep it as a casual conversation sort of thing. So first of all, just want to say super thank you for giving me, because I realize that this time, like, your time's valuable, and so giving me the time, a couple of hours today to come and talk to me in my humble little podcast in my humble little home. It's very interesting for me, as I said, and I've been following your campaign pretty closely, and something really interesting happened. So my son's 17. And he's pretty interested in politics because, look, I talk about it way too much, right? But I try to tell people, right, do you care about health? Do you care about the roads? If you care about all those things, then you should care about politics. And I firmly believe, Lisa, that if more people were more engaged in politics, we'd get, like, better outcomes. So anyway, what can I do? Teach God. So, so he's like, oh, Dad, I'm a bit spewing because, like, he'll be 18 in May, so he's just going to miss out. But I was like, look, you could still be involved somehow. And he's like, how? And I said, well, what's an important issue to you? So he says, oh, the new P-plater, like, you can only have one person, blah, 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 blah. So he goes, oh, I'm going to email Adam, see what he thinks, So I said, well, here's a little exercise for you. Why don't you email all the candidates and see what they say and how they reply? So he did that, and it was very interesting, Lisa, because one of them, I'll say no reply at all. Still, I'll have to check with Kai, but still no reply. Adam pretty much got back to him straight away and said, this is kind of, the party policy, blah, blah, blah. You got back to him pretty much straight away, but you also said, this is our policy, but what do you think? Another candidate, which I won't name, took about a week and it was just blah, 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 and the other one, like, no response. So you got the gold star.
I appreciate that, Ara. I think and that's so much of, why we're involved and why we do what we do is because, people ask, what are you interested in? Why do you want to get involved in politics? And it's because I actually care about people and I like to help. And there's no point coming in and telling people what I think because, it's a little bit of that. You've got to be able to make decisions and things like that. But at the end of the day, it's all about, well, what do the people want and what's important to them? And if you don't listen to people, how do you know what's right? And how do you know what it is that, how you can help people if you don't hear from people's opinions? It's I find it very interesting that there's not enough of that goes on. People don't ask people what they think. There's subject matter experts on so many things, and they're not people don't ask other people what they think about things anymore. It's almost taboo to have to have a conversation and to be able to share ideas in case they're not the same as what other people think.
Why do you think that is?
I think the world is that people don't like to disagree anymore. And you don't want to. Nobody wants to offend anybody, and so they don't have the conversations anymore. And if you don't actually talk to people, I've been having a giggle. I actually just said to my son on the way out, I'm like, all right, well, I'm off to talk about myself for 2 hours. That'll be hard, but that is a thing that people don't do enough of anymore is actually it's all, you know, and so much of it is on the internet and, you know, 30-second bites and that kind of thing. The art of actually sitting down and talking to people and asking them, what do you think and what is it that's important to you, that it's going away. You know, they talk about, you know, things that you shouldn't talk about at the dinner table. Well, you know, you should talk about things. That's how else do you learn?
Yeah, wow. There's two crazy things there. I like how you kind of just candidly said that, because you're a politician, you're not really supposed to say that.
Yeah, I'm luckily enough in my world we're allowed off the chain a little bit, but I also, yeah, I have to be who I am, and I and that comes with it. You know, I'm honest to a fault, which is probably going to get me in trouble over the next hour or two, but that is who I am, and if I'm not authentic, then that won't get me anywhere. So you have to be who you are.
Yeah.
And that brings with it, you know, that is how you can garner support, because people see through.
100%. The other thing is, it's a different era now. And look, like I said, I'm only small time, right? But people don't get their news the same way that they used to. And it's a lot easier, I find, even for myself, to, you know, get to the truth of things. And going back to the other thing before we move on, what you said about communication, Lisa, I reckon, right, pretty much most of the world's problems, and like pick a rabbit hole, right, and we'll go down it, they all start the same way, communication. But it's a bit of a lost art.
It is. I'm not a traveller. I haven't travelled much. And I always say to people, say, oh, you know, didn't you want to go there? I'm like, well, sure, but I want to meet the people, and I can meet the people wherever. You know, if I went, I'd, there's a few places I'd love to see, but all I'd do is go to the pub and chat to the locals. That's the kind of thing I like learning about people, and, you know, what makes them tick and what's important to them. I mean, we live in a beautiful place. I was just driving in from Mundaring on the way here, and I actually just turned and said to my husband, because there was smog this morning and it's cleared, I said, don't we live in just such a, you know, what more could you want? You know, we live in such a beautiful area. So I've never had that that urge to, you know, to wander too much further than our own backyard, because to me, I'm all about the engagement with people.
That's interesting, because a lot of people have a different perspective about that, but that, you know, I'm a bit like you, like I'm interested in people. That's why I'm actually doing this, basically, because it sounds stupid, but like I get excited, like I was getting excited before you get here, because like I get to sit down with Lisa for like an hour or two, like no one else around, and I just get to like talk to her properly. So yeah, and touching back on that, so I know it's gonna sound weird for you, right, because like I'm a little bit older than you, but this generation, new generation, so I'd say you, Matt, Libby, Mia, even though she's maybe a bit older, but you just don't realize, right, how different you are from the ones that came before you. And like, don't worry, I tried to talk to those ones as well, and it was like, it's chalk and cheese for me. Like, and I was just like, you know, I put my faith in humans all the time, that like we are growing up, we are getting better. And look, you know, like Adam, I told him last time, I was like, look, you guys got smashed, right? So you had to kind of learn from it. And one of the things that you and I talked about before, I think when we met at the markets, was like, I asked you, because like I've met all your candidates now, that you're all completely 100% reasonable, normal, highly intelligent people, right? So I asked you, I said, why do you think people think that they can just shit on politicians? And you told me the story about how you're volunteering somewhere, and you know, the lady said to you, oh, what do you do? And you said, oh, I'm a politician. And she said, oh, I hate all politicians. And then you gave a wicked reply, which I don't know if you remember, but I said, what do you think that's about? And then you gave me the analogy of the field umpires. What you said to me was that, you know, the field umpires sort of went, you know, so kids umpire, and they went through this phase where they were getting a lot of abuse, right? And then they were copping it. And then as a society, we kind of learned from it. Oh, if people won't umpire if we do this, if treat them anymore. And you were saying how you've noticed with your kids' sport that how it's different now and how people are actually going up to the umpires at the end and saying, hey, man, good game, well done.
Yeah, well, we do. We need to bring society along. But, you know, there are a couple of bad eggs that do make it harder. But as a whole, I mean, you want people – you need people. That's how the democracy is set up. You need people to represent you, and yet you make it so that you don't want, you know, people don't want to do it because it is. It's hard. I mean, you have random people saying that they hate what you do just as a, you know, don't know you from a bar of soap. Yeah. Oh, I try and stay out of the comments.
You know what? I actually reckon you guys manage it, like, pretty well. Because there was like one example I saw, you know, some ladies, oh, well, you delete my comments. And you replied and said, well, if you're going to like have some constructive criticism, we're okay. But if you're just going to like spread hate, then you're not interested. And like when you get a chance, right, go look at my Facebook page, Hillsblake, right, and just have a look through the comments. Like, and like I get messages last night, like from God. And the funny thing is they think because I'm sitting down with you guys that I'm affiliated with all you guys. And like they didn't even listen. You know, like half the trolls, I said to him, like, well, you obviously didn't even listen. But yeah, I think we're losing that, what you said about communication, the personal face. Because, like, meeting all you guys face to face, I realized, like, oh, I'll be honest with you, Lisa, I reckon these are the best candidates I've ever seen. And I've been following this as a hobby since the late 80s.
Yeah, look, I think, it's a wonderful area. So, getting great people to want to represent the area. But I do think that there is a bit of a, especially here in the hills, it's sort of a younger generation coming through. You know, I'm not young per se, but I'm not doing this in my 60s or 70s either, which is that used to be an awful lot of what you saw, especially for female politicians. But I think that, yeah, that the interest in the area, but also the renewal in all of the parties as well, and we get that. And I've been a member of my party for nearly 20 years now, and I think that it's sort of like almost missed a generation in between there, and it's the people now coming through. And I think it's important. I think I've always been interested in being engaged, whether that be, you know, your sporting club, or, you know, I was president of play groups and all those kind of things. And it's those kinds of, it's that giving back that just sort of missed a bit of a generation, I think. But it's starting to, I think people are starting to realise that it's important to, I always, and I say it a little bit tongue in cheek as an 80s kid, but act, belong, commit is real. It's actually important. And it's how you stay connected to, you know, whether it's community or whether it's self, and it's so important for, you know, for your sense of self and for your mental health, I think, to be a part of something. That could be a million and one different things. For me, it's been, you know, mostly it's been being involved in community, but it's just, it is, I think it's so important for people to have something.
Where do you think that started in you?
Yeah, I was actually being interviewed by the Echo the other day and had a similar conversation. So I grew up in a different sort of childhood, or a rougher childhood, and I was that kid whose mum wasn't involved in anything, and so I was that kid that, you know, was kind of left out and that sort of thing. And I think as I got older, and, you know, my fortunes changed, and I went and went and lived with my dad and my stepmom, and I realised how important it is to be a part of something instead of just, you know, on your own. And I've always had this fierce desire to be involved. And then when I moved out to the wheat belt in a small country town, and they do it. It's so easy to do it there. It's almost impossible not to get involved in things. And so you start slowly or small, and you go along to something, and next thing you know, you're on the board or you're a president of this association or running that, and I very quickly learnt how, you know, what it takes to make a community or to run a community, and it's off the back of volunteers, and so I just kept, you know, getting involved and doing those kind of things, and yeah, I've just it feeds something within me that I love being involved. You know, I manage, you know, kids' football teams and all of that kind of thing, and I have the capacity to do that. And it makes me happy to help others in the way that I can. You know, I was never going to be a doctor or a nurse or all those kind of things, but I'm great administratively, and I'm really good at connecting people and helping manage that kind of stuff. And so that's the way that I, you know, give back to the community that gives so much to me.
Interesting. So if you don't mind, I want to explore the rough childhood a little bit, as much as you want to say. Feel free to pass on anything. But can you give me a bit of an idea of what that looked like?
Yeah. So many people, I think because I spent time out in the wheat belt, even, you know, within my own party, assume that I'm a farmer's daughter or something like that. But no, I grew up in Maddington, in the foothills. I was, for the first 12 years of my life, with my mum, we were in Holmes West housing. She was quite ill most of her life, and she struggled with mental health issues. And so, you know, I was that kid that people, felt sorry for, you know. But I also very luckily have an amazing, my mum was amazing. She just struggled, you know, loved her to death. But she struggled with life a fair bit. But her parents and my grandparents and my auntie were a huge part of my life. So I spent all of my weekends in Gooseberry Hill with my grandparents. Had an awful lot to do with them. And then when I was 12, mum moved away and I went to live with my dad and my stepmum, and, you know, had more of a stable, normal kind of home life from then on, and was able to build. And I was really lucky in year seven, I had a, which was last year of primary school back then, I had an amazing teacher who just saw that potential in me and saw that, you know, I was always confident but lacked the backing to make that into something. And she saw that potential in me, and she just she used to write positive notes home every week, or I think she actually started with every day. I think by the end of the year, they may have gone to the end, you know, to the week. I still got them to this day. You know, I got seven of them that year, and it was just on a little notepad, and she'd read them out to the class on something positive. And it, you know, small things can make a huge difference in people's lives. And she did that for me. And, you know, I went off to high school, and I went to a different high school than where I'd been. So I, you know, was able to start fresh, I suppose, and just kept moving from there, just kept growing and being, you know, more than what I suppose was assumed I could have been. And so I've always had that desire to, I've always worked hard. That's not been an issue, but I've always, that desire to grow and, you know, do well, I suppose. And I've been able to push and get there. And, you know, now I live here on the Bickley, on the Heritage Trail. And, but I didn't, I worked bloody hard for it too.
Yeah. Cause, your CV, which I won't go over, but this is not a normal person's CV, you know what I mean? Like, I can see already that when you go do something, you go do it properly. And do you think, so before, I sort of want to go back a little bit. So you sort of basically, what you're telling me is that the fact that childhood, you kind of missed out on a few things, you think that's actually what fostered a desire to want to be involved? And I guess what I'm curious is, right, is if you had a cruisy childhood, do you think the same thing would have happened?
You never know. I mean, you can't guess. I mean, I've got brothers, and you know, everyone has a different story and maybe a different way of seeing it as well. I think that it's got a big part of, especially when I had kids, it sort of changed everything, the thought, you know, what I had perceived as being normal and okay changed really quickly then. But look, I think it definitely played a part. Yeah, oh, hugely played a part. I always knew that I was going to get involved in my kids' lives and be at the sports games and come to the assemblies and do all of that sort of stuff, because it's, yeah, I know what it felt like to have it the other, you know, to have it the other way. And look, I had lots of other family who were wonderfully supportive. My dad and my stepmum are the most amazing people, worked their butts off their entire lives to...
I know exactly what it's like, because actually you almost described my childhood there as well. And it was one of those things where I kind of realized at an early age I'm just not like other people, and I'd have thoughts like, because I consider myself a free thinker kind of thing, and I just realized, oh, most people just don't think about what they're doing, but I never had the confidence. And yeah, same thing, it wasn't until I had a few teachers sort of, or a few other people, let's say, sort of instill that in me, like, hey, you actually like pretty talented, you could do this. I was going to say, do you want to give that teacher a shout out? What was her name?
She's Leah Andrews nowadays. We're friends on Facebook, so she might see this, and I'd like to think that she knows how important she was, but I think I've told her once or twice along the journey. It takes sometimes those small things. And when you were talking about being a free thinker, I only found out not that long ago that not everybody has an internal monologue. That's and right. It scares the crap out of me. Yeah. I think, what do they do with, like,
it's a thing.
Is it just dead in there? Like, I really wonder, you know, obviously nothing goes on. And that whole idea, I think, is, quite bizarre to me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're exactly the same. I could see that early on. And it's, yeah, that's a whole nother podcast. But, yeah, you either kind of are or you're not. And, look, you can learn to be, but it's the one thing I try and teach my son. The one thing I try and teach him above all other things, right, is to be objective. Because if you can't be objective, you're going to struggle, like, no matter what you do. And I mean really be objective, like really step away and be able to look at things. It's the quickest way you, like, solve stuff. And, you know, one of my favorite quotes as well is the obstacle is the way. And that's why it's like I wouldn't be nowhere near where I am now if half the bad stuff didn't happen to me. So, you know, it's a bit of a fine line, because we try to avoid the pain, but I also say, you know, the comfort zone is where dreams go to die. You got to put yourself out there a bit. And I want to ask you too, so when you said you started again in high school, because I had a similar experience, I was over East and I was like the lowest common denominator. My folks separated, my mum married a pastor, and as far as all the kids were concerned, like, that was the kid that you bully. And then when I came here to Carmel, right, I was just like anybody else, and a few of the girls actually liked me, and it was like I couldn't believe the difference. Would you say that was the difference for your school, where you got to start all over again? And sort of, where did you fit into your class then?
Yeah, well, I did. Only had one or two people from, you know, my primary school that came to the same high school. I was in a an academic program, so I started slow because I was in that program, but luckily had met a couple of people, the girl who is still my best friend now, and she also lived a bit away from the school, so we'd catch the train together, and yeah, sort of pulled myself out from, you know, the what would be considered nowadays, you know, the nerdier kids, and was able to grow through that, and ended up, you know, I did student council and that kind of stuff, because I've always been in liked that kind of thing, and you know, in primary school, I put my hand up and didn't get it. In high school, I could, you know, and it was, and I was living with my dad then as well. So I was able to have friends visit and things like that. And yeah, it just sort of grew from there. I was, you know, popular enough, I suppose. I actually didn't finish high school. I left at the end of, well, left at the beginning of year 11. Because I moved out of home at 16 because I'm, you know, strong, fiercely independent and thought I knew everything. I think because I'd had to be, you know, independent as a younger kid and had to look after myself and my younger brother an awful lot, I think, you know, then going to live in a normal family environment, I was like, I know what I'm doing. It's okay, guys. I've got this. So I went off and got an apprenticeship. My dad had said, well, you can't leave school unless you've got a job to go to. So I got a traineeship, I think they were called back then, and did that. And you know, it was.
So what was that in?
It would have been. I guess I was doing my Cert 3 in business admin, but yeah. But then when I I'm sure we'll get to that longer down the story. When I, moved back to the city after being in the wheat belt for a decade, I was lucky enough to be able to get myself in into a uni course through RPL, so through recognised prior learning, through what I'd been doing in my work. So from someone who didn't finish high school to now have a graduate diploma in management. I did that. That's what I did, as a single mum when I moved back to the city. And just, like I said, just sometimes you just got to work hard and do those kind of things to be able to get to where you're going. So,
yeah, let's fill in that gap. So between the traineeship and you kind of just skipped over 10 years there, yeah. But give me a bit of a, because like I said, I've read through your CV. We won't even go through it because we don't have time, but it's a pretty impressive list of stuff. But I've also noticed, one thing I've noticed, because obviously I sit down and research all you guys before you come on, you, Adam, Matt, and a couple of the others that I've got coming up, you have similar traits and you tend to do something, you tend to stay 2 or 3 years, do it really well, but then instead of staying and getting stale, you kind of move up to the next thing, and like none of them are particularly big jumps, but if you look at the first one and the last one, it's like, holy cow.
Yeah, no, I think I guess that comes from, good work ethic, and also loyalty goes a long way as well, I think. And I try to, look after the people that work for me or work with me, and I'm, quite personal in that way. But I moved out of home at 16, got a job doing, back then it was at a, what's called a part nine, the part nine debt agreement. Yeah, part nine debt agreement. So in the finance world, sort of the step before bankruptcy, but I was doing admin there. But from there, I actually went and worked as a debt collector for a while. That was interesting.
What was that like?
So much of what that was, I wasn't the one knocking on people's doors. I was the one on the phone, and a lot of it is actually finding people. So you had the reverse phone book, and the internet exists, but MySpace probably didn't even exist back then, let alone Facebook. So a lot of it was ringing people, ringing neighbours and trying to find people. So it was what they called skip tracing. So that was interesting, but I was... Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, but back then would have been 17, and I was living at a home, and they changed the shifts, and some of the shifts to be, instead of being 9 to 5, or we went nationwide, and some of the shifts started at 4 a.m. because it was during the daylight savings trial, and couldn't catch public transport. I could get there. I remember I had a friend come and pick me up for a couple of bits, but she didn't want to go too far out of her way. So I used to wait for her at 3:30 in the morning under the underpass of Great Eastern Highway and Orong Road.
Whoa.
As a 17-year-old. So that didn't last. So I went and did some other things. And then I yeah, I think I wanted a bit of a change. So yeah,
so that's what led to the move?
Yeah, yeah. So I went, I was, my mum had lived out in the same, out in the town that I moved to Bruce Rock. And so I knew some people out there.
What made you choose that? Oh, that. Sorry.
Yeah, well, I knew some people out there. I'd been visiting her for, you know, I'd go and visit her.
That's where my every best now and mate again is from.
Oh yes, yeah. I spent a decade out there. So, and then she'd moved back to Perth. So it was probably about time for me to move out of Perth. And so yeah, I was looking for work out there and got some work and went and moved out to what they used to call Melrose Place. So the single, you know, the single quarters, and took a job up in the Shire and learned a bit about local government and. I think that's probably where it all, you know, the whole political side of things started.
Well, that was my next question. Yeah. So, okay. So you're working for the Shire. Yep. And so, and then your next job after that?
After the Shire, I was the executive officer for an organisation called WA Rural Youth. So what used to be Junior Farmers. So I'd been, I'd gone along to one of their conventions and, I was on their board for a little while and yeah, the opportunity. So I think I was 20, 21, 20.
Still pretty young. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And,
you can check that if you want. That's cool. No worries.
Sorry. I might
this
actually.
This is the Hills Bloke podcast. We do what we want. Cool. Yeah. So what we're saying, so, okay. So that's what, that's what sort of sparked the interest. Cause you said as well, you've been a member for 20 years.
Nearly 20 years. Yeah, next year it'll be 20 years. I joined in 2016, yeah.
And so is that what sparked the interest? You just started thinking, I like this?
No, it's another story. God, all my stories. I don't like to trade on sad things or bad things. But
that's what this is all about, telling stories.
So I was working at the Shire and my sister-in-law died in a car accident in the local area.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And, yes, it wasn't fun. And I worked at the Shire at the time and the Shire wrote to Main Roads to say, this is a risky road. You know, we've just had another fatality here. Something needs to be done. And I opened the mail back then. And I was the one who opened the letter saying, sorry, not a priority. And it just hurt. It was just, you know, I understand, but it felt, you know, it was personal.
It's done.
Yeah. And the local paper had an advert in it saying, you know, we've got a meeting, come along, tell us your concerns, tell us what's important to you. And I'd met our local member, funnily enough, at some events that I was involved with through the Rural Youth organisation that I was a part of. And so I went along and it was, he was late and very late. But it was back then. So that was 2007. And our local member was Brendan Grills and we were in opposition and he's quite a charismatic, engaging character, but he actually came in, and he was late and he had his wife and his firstborn child that was 6 days old. They were on their way home from the hospital and they still came to the meeting and came and listened. And as any organisation, it doesn't need to be a political party. If you show up to, you come to a meeting, next thing you know, you're signing a form. And two weeks later, I think I was the secretary of the branch and I was invited to come along to conference. And that's back then, I think Mia was the executive officer of our party. She was still a young Nat as well back then. And I've just stayed involved since.
Yeah. Why leave? If it's not broken, don't fix it.
Oh, we're not necessarily here to talk about party, but we talk about our party like a family, and we really are that way. I when I moved back to the city, I probably could have gone either way. I knew I wanted to stay engaged politically, and the Nats weren't doing much in the city then. I'm quite centrist. I've got, you know, I always go with socially progressive, fiscally conservative. You know, I want to be able to, you want reward for hard work and you want government not to be involved in your life, but you also need to look after the people that you need to look after. And I'm, you know, by no means, I'm quite socially progressive. Yeah. And, but I couldn't leave my friends, I think was the idea. And so I stayed involved and started working within the party as well, but and sort of brought them on the journey. And here we are running in Kalamunda.
How did they and come to sort of like lead in the city? And before I get you to answer that, so basically I see your market, right, as like outside the two main parties. Now, Lisa, when I first started voting, right, 3 to 5% in 88 or 90 voted something other than the major parties, right? Then the next election, it was 7 to 9%, and then it went to 15, and then it went to 21, and last election, Lisa, 30% of Australians wrote down something other than the two main parties. So to me, I mean, obviously the Nationals, to me, that's an opportunity, because I can tell you, like, looking at the poll numbers for this election, right, without going into it too much, you've still got about 30% of the people have not decided who they're voting for, and you're talking about 4-point margins that were 15-point margins. So, yeah, how did the Nationals sort of come around to, like, realising that there was, you know, opportunity for them to come to the city, and especially in the hills, right, because I think it was either you or me I was talking to saying when they were knocking on doors up here, right, they're actually realising, they talk to people, oh, I'm from Darwin, oh, I'm from 2J, I'm from Bonnington, right, because there's a reason why we live up here, Lisa, and we don't live down there, right?
Yes.
And I tell my son, Kai, right, when the zombie apocalypse hits, we'll go and stand on the scarp and watch it, yeah. You know, and that's like a euphemism saying why we live up here. So, yeah, would you mind sort of like telling me how that came about and then how that led to you being the candidate?
Yeah, it's possibly a little bit of a different story for me than some of the other areas that we're running in. You know, we're running in Bateman and Scarborough and some of those areas as well. But for me in the hills, I've actually, you know, I sit on State Council. I'm quite entwined within our party system. So I speak to a lot of the people. And I think it was about 3 years ago that I made my intentions that I thought that we needed to be running in Kalamunda, quite clear. But what happened after the last state election, the first thing that McGowan did was to take away the boundaries in the upper house. And that makes a huge difference to us as Nationals. And so we needed to, the upper house now is going to be going to a statewide rather than being split into six regions. Which is a threat to our representation, to the opportunity for us to get more members into Parliament. So
yeah, I was going to say, what do you think? You like it? I think it's an improvement. Same with the preferences; it's better than what it was.
Yeah, well, for people who've, you know, for regional representation, it's going to be hard because you used to have guaranteed regional representation in the upper house, and now that's not guaranteed. And as you know, 90% of the people do live in the metro area, but a lot more of the profit is made outside of those areas. And you still need to look after the people who don't live, you know, in those areas. So, as a country person, I think it's going to make it an awful lot harder for, country people to be able to see and interact with their parliamentarians. But I understand that. A lot of people are okay with it, but for us to be able then to get as many people into Parliament as we can to be able to represent the people that we want to represent or represent the entire state, we needed to be, you know, cast to a wider audience. And so that was one part of it. But I've been here in the hills I moved back in 2015, so I can, as of this year, I can say a decade now, and which I'm still shocked that 2015 was a decade ago, but that's okay.
Like 2 years as old as me.
Yeah, I'm getting there. But I knew that I was wanting to run for the Nats in Kalamunda anyway, because we're hills folk. We're not city people. That is exactly why, as someone who spent time out in the country, I got here and went, this will do. It's close enough. It's, we've got the benefit of the amenity, and yet we're small communities. I was in Parkerville this morning. I was at Darlington a couple of days, and we're all unique communities, you know, along the Scarp.
He tried to explain it to people, and it was interesting when I did the Adam one. He said that he really noticed it when he went down there, the big difference between the community and the non-community.
I was listening to him say that, and I definitely understood because I'm from there.
Yeah.
And I don't want to go back.
We take it for granted, but, yeah, and I think it seems like a logical progression for me because the Nationals, in my view, are a growing party. And the thing about the Nationals too, right, if you look at their seats, they tend not to lose them. They tend to be regional, right, but they keep them. And like somebody like Mia who's got like, because I reckon you two are probably the best team, like going forward, because you've got her experience to tap into. And so I was curious to know as well, like, what have you sort of learned? Because obviously you've known Mia for a long time. What have you learned off her and what does she bring to the party?
Yeah, a lot I've learned from Mia. I am in my pre-selection speech, which nearly was a year ago now, and so Bullwinkle didn't exist at that time. One of the big part of it was saying, you know, I'm really glad to be in this next phase of my life and putting my hand up for pre-selection. But I was really sad to not be doing it with Mia and our good friend Martin Aldridge, who's also retiring from the Upper House. And when they created Bullwinkle and the idea was planted that Mia might do it, and I said to her, I said, look, I don't want to, you know, you need to look after you and you need to do what's right for you. I said, but how much fun would that be? So so Mia was the member for, she was a member for the Ag region and then member for the Central Wheat Belt. And I've actually, up until last year, I was the president of her electorate council for 15 years. We've been doing this together in a different kind of role. I was more behind the scenes back then, but we've been doing this together for a long time.
Not your first rodeo?
No. Well, I have run before, but I had a different name then. So I was actually the Nationals candidate in 2016 for the seat of Durack federally. It was, you know, an 8-week campaign, not a year-long campaign. But I've done a bit with, I have been a candidate before. But Mia and I've been working closely together. I was her office manager a few years ago when she was leader of the opposition as well. But what do I learn from her? We're quite frank with each other. I was at a ratepayers forum a couple of nights ago, and it was a hostile crowd. Was not not true believers, I suppose. And so we haven't had too many hostile crowds. You know, you tend to get put in front of people who want to hear from you, not people who don't like you. And she rang and she, you know, great job, which is wonderful. And she's like, but, and you know, here's all the things that you could build on. And I think that's important. You need those mentors, and she's been in politics for a very long time. It's really good to have a mentor there who can help you out with those things. And I find, you know, we were chatting at the markets, and I've been doing that, you know, for a couple of years, and every time it's that bit easier. You learn more, especially if you're talking about policy and things like that, but it just becomes a little bit more natural every time. And as I've grown in confidence, I have realised that I just do need to be, you know, being me with that knowledge of, you know, the policy and then that kind of stuff as well. That's all you can do, because if you're trying too hard or you're trying to fake it, it doesn't work, and then you get
people see.
Yeah, and you stuff up as well. Like if you're just parroting a line, it's not, you've got to believe what you're talking about, or else you'll get lost very, really quickly.
Yeah, and I think Mia's good at that too, because the first interactions are when I first met you guys, right? Because, like, really, like, you're walking through the markets, right? Like, who the fuck's this guy? Like, some guy with a beard leans over and says, hey, I want to ask you a question.
And that can always go two ways. You never really know what you're going to get.
Yeah. And that's what I mean. Like, you don't know me. Like, I could be fucking anybody, you know? And and I said to me, I got to ask you a question, you know. And I said, why, you know, in a two-party system, why do we need the Nationals, you know? And I was super really impressed, right, because it sounds like a simple candid thing, right? Now, I've said similar questions to other candidates, and I'm not trying to throw anyone under the bus, right? But I, like, when I ask people a question like that, the first thing I do, Lisa, right, is I always teach my son, right, watch what they do, don't listen to what they say, right? Because you can tell, it's body language, right, by people's initial reactions. And I was super impressed the way she just, like, calmly, you know, just sort of took her breath and said, because, you know, our party's into policy, not ideology. And I was like, fucking drop the mic, you know what I mean? Like, that's the best answer I've heard from, like, any candidate. And like I said, I think you guys have actually got the best team. I think you'll do very well. I think you're going to surprise a lot of people. And look, I can see as well that you're building towards something as well, and I think it's a good space up in the hills. And like I said, I've been super impressed watching, you know, both your campaigns so far.
I'm looking forward to surprising a few people. I had somebody once say to me, and this was, yeah, this probably like just before I ran last time, is don't underestimate me. I might seem
30%.
I had a dream about it. I'm a vivid dreamer, and I remember my dreams, and my poor husband has to listen to it all the time. I'm sure a lot of it's processing, some of it's just weird crap that works, but yeah, I had a dream about the election and the stats and how it all worked out, and I'm like, yeah, that we can do that. And so I'm, you know, not necessarily, I'm not into premonitions or anything like that.
Have you got into lucid dreaming?
I do lucid dream. I can actually effectively stop my own dreams. Oh, and wow. I'm not going to be able to remember. I do false awakenings as well. Oh, okay. And honest, but on a spiral loop sometimes when I'm super stressed, so I can false awake in my dreams. This is a weird tangent.
We're just getting into the shit that I love talking about.
My dreams about for 9 or 10 loops in a row until I can lucidly tell myself, wake up, you idiot. You're not like, and wake myself up.
Okay, well, I'll just make a note. We'll come back to the politics. Here's the thing, right, because I find, right, people that are generally free thinkers, right, I generally ask them, right, does the divine universe ever tell you things, right? Because me and my mate Corbin, right, we get a saying, we're not psychic, right? And what that means is we fucking think we might be, but we don't really want to admit it because we don't do woo. But every now and again, things come. And going back to lucid dreaming, so what I do is, like, I find that if I tell myself during the day, so I'll tell myself tonight I will be dreaming and I will be lucid dreaming. The other thing is, which I've really been getting into on Spotify, is, like, there's a lot of frequencies and stuff, like meditation frequencies that you can, and you can type in lucid dreaming and all that. And Lisa, like, fuck, it's mind-blowing, man. And, like, what spins me out is the fact that you can actually really control what you're doing. And I was getting so good at it, right, for a while there, especially, like, after my heart attack, because I reckon that does something to you when you nearly die. And I was getting so good. I was picking scenarios. And eventually, right, I had to kind of, like, take a break from it because it was getting so exhausting. I said to my wife, I feel like I'm living at night and during the day.
Yes. Yeah, oh, definitely. I definitely can wake up and be like, did I sleep or did I just live a different life? Mm. Like, it's just an adventure that I've been on and whatever's happening there. So no, but I if I wake up and I haven't got anything, I'm like, was I just dead? It's odd for me to not to. I'm sure it's more restful.
Because I believe everyone's kind of like, I explain it at least, right? Without getting into too much work, everyone's an antenna. Some people's antennas better than others.
Yeah, well, mine's a bit shot at the moment. Actually, I need surgery on my skull, and so there's a which was not the thing that I needed to find out just after being pre-selected. But there's a hole behind my inner ear that needs plugging, and so the things don't filter properly at the moment. So it's a drain on my brain. And it affects my balance an awful lot. So,
You wouldn't get that sort of. I have a friend who's a fireman. He had the same thing.
Yeah. It's,
and he was getting vertigo pretty bad at the end.
Yeah.
He was like, it's making me nauseous.
Yep.
So it's relatively safe.
Yeah, I'm not worried about it.
It's when just they go on your head, still, yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, lucid dreaming. Wow, that's pretty good. Hey, let me ask this then. Does the universe ever tell you things?
Oh, look, I probably, you know, do I listen? I don't know. I tell myself things, I think, I suppose. You know, I'm a bit of a, I back myself.
That's kind of what I mean.
Yeah.
You are the universe.
Yeah.
When I say the universe, so I'm kind of had this belief, right, that the universe or God or whatever you want to call it is in all of us.
Yeah. No, I am.
Just whether you listen or not.
Yes. Yeah. I listen. Yeah. I'm quite happy to go on, you know, call it intuition, call it whatever you like. But no, if I think something's right, whether that's, you know, the universe telling me or something, or yes. Something else. I'm pretty happy to go with it. You've got to be able to back in wherever that thought, you know, it comes from somewhere, whether it's a dream, whether it's a fleeting moment, but if, you know, you've got to be able to listen to.
Yeah, I agree. Don't ignore it. Anyway, we digress. So back to the boring stuff. So one thing I'm interested in, so you're knocking on a lot of doors at the moment. Like, what are people generally sort of saying?
It's interesting. So I'm knocking on doors in Kalamunda, right, and Mundaring. I actually get more people saying, I live here. I don't really have all that much to complain about, which I find really heartwarming because so much of, yeah, first world problems is, you know, if the biggest problem we've got is are we going to have McDonald's or not, we're probably doing okay. I understand that that's an important issue to people. I'm not belittling that that's something that's important to them, but that if that is our biggest problem, you know, we're doing okay where we are. So I've been heartwarmed by the people, by people's positivity. But outside of that, there is the biggest thing that we hear is that there's just, you know, the overreach of the government at the moment is just too much. They just want them to get out of their lives. They're making decisions that without consulting people or anyone, you know, whether it be industry experts, whether it be the industry itself.
Gun owners.
Yep. We've got an awful lot of angry licensed firearm owners, and they just want government to stop getting involved in their lives and making decisions that affect their day-to-day lives and their lawful day-to-day lives. Soon you're not going to be able to go four-wheel driving in half the areas that you're allowed to go. Fishing has been, you know, tied up, and you need different licenses now, and they've shut down the demersal fishing. And there's the idea that this overreach has gone too far is engaging people who would not have been politically engaged before. I've had so many people.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so many people say, you know, I'm 40 years old, I'm 50 years old, I've never even bothered to enroll to vote. I hate the whole idea of it, and I'm voting this time because I finally realised that I've got to do something. Wow. And that's how far this government has gone, to piss people off who've not even cared before, who've thought it wasn't worth it, and they're going, this has got to stop. And it's happening all over the world, a bit of that.
That's interesting. That's so interesting because I would say, right, like, all the good stuff is hidden in the bad stuff. So it actually takes sometimes for bad things to happen for people to realize. That's super interesting to me because, like, that's exactly what I think, right? But I've got to be careful because am I in a bubble? Am I just telling myself that? But, you know, like I said in the other podcast, repeating myself, but, you know, 100 years ago, right, you could go about your day and maybe have one interaction with the government, right? Like if I go fishing, we worked it out, it's like 8 or 9 different licenses and fees and all those. So what do you think what could your party do? What do you think you could do about, you know, because obviously you can't change that stuff overnight.
No.
But where do you start?
One of the things that's important to us is not to make false promises. You know, we could come in and say, oh, we're going to fix everything. But as you said, you can't fix everything overnight. And, you know, we have to live in our communities and go back and answer to these people. So there's no point in just turning around and saying, we're going to just overturn everything and start from scratch. But I think the first thing that we can do, and it harks back to the first thing that you and I are discussing, is listen. And that's one of the most important things to do. And then, you know, slowly but surely actually go back to the drawing board. So take
build a policy from there.
Take firearms, for instance. You know, we've come out and we've said that in the first week we'll move a disallowance motion to halt the regulations and go back to the drawing board, and actually consult with people, because there are, you know, it'd be silly for us to say that everything's wrong. You know, there are some things that do need changing, and some.
Hang on, back the truck up, please. What the fuck are you saying? Like, yeah. Politicians, this is all the stuff that, like, because I basically identify as a libertarian, right? All these things that you're saying, like, honestly, you're going to make me cry, because these are all the things that we've been wanting to hear from our politicians for years. You know, that I know it sounds candid, but like,
yeah, and look, and I think for us as Nats, it's because we live in our communities. The bullshit meter is really high, and it's probably one of the reasons
I'm saying.
Yeah, and because we do get to be ourselves. We were, was that my, basically my vetting meeting, you know, where you sit down with the powers that be to make sure that you're going to be a fit and proper person to be a candidate. And I've been involved in the party for a long time, so they know all of my skeletons, and I don't need to talk about them on the radio. But I've been around, and somebody asked a question, and you know, answered it, and was the Honourable Colin Holt. So he was one of our he was a former president of our party, but also an upper house member for us down in the southwest. And he also said, yeah, but you've got to be you. Like, there's no point. You can't not be you. And that's really important.
It seems so obvious to me, right? But it's just not what we get most of the time. And this is what I say.
The public makes it hard, though, sometimes, because you've got to be you as long as you fit what the media isn't going to trash you about.
Yeah. And so look, I think society is slowly waking up, because look how much the world's changed even in the last 5 years. And I can tell you, as someone, like I said, you know, so I identify as libertarian. So basically I believe that you should be able to do pretty much anything you want as long as you're not harming another human being, right? And if you actually go around and ask anybody, right, Lisa, everyone's a libertarian, right? But it's not what we do. And somehow we've got to get back to just doing the right things, serving the people, all the stuff that sounds obvious. And that's why it gives me, you know, a lot of hope that the new candidates coming through, and it's especially what I see from your party in particular, that you're prepared to listen, you know. And so actually one thing I did want to, like, talk to you about, going back and then on the road tolls, because I found it very interesting, like I said, you got the gold star, but the fact that you were prepared to listen, because, you know, I've been banging on about this like forever, and I don't really see it as a hard problem to solve, right? But it comes to that question, why don't we solve it, you know? And, you know, back in the day I had to do a lot of just hardcore, straight up journalism research, right? And now it's fucking crazy, right? Because you got AI, right? So I'm just going to bust out my phone, right? But let's, because you seem like you're open to listen, I thought to myself, right, I'll ask AI like what it thinks about, you know, road tolls and stuff, right? And this shit would have taken me like fucking 3 years, Lisa, before, right? But and I got on a side tangent, right? Because actually, here's a really interesting thing. My number one fan, Stan, he gave me the idea. We were talking about a republic, right? Because we're a bit kind of over the whole parliamentarian system. Should we be a republic? Should we move on? What's the constitution look like? And then Stan says to me, he goes, oh, we should ask AI what a constitution. And I was like, well, that's another, I won't sidetrack, right? But so anyway, so I ask it, AI, what countries in the world have the lowest road deaths and what do they do differently? So Norway, 2.1 deaths per 100,000. Sweden, and then it basically says, strong focus on road safety, strict laws, high quality infrastructure and public education. Sweden, 2.17, pretty much says the same things, public education, high levels of driver education, Iceland, Denmark, Finland, right? So you can see where it's going. Now, what I found was really interesting, right, and it did, give like a whole lot of bunch of stuff that they actually do, right? But what I found interesting was I got sidetracked, then I came back. So then I was like, okay, what does Australia do, right? What do we look like? Now, here's the really interesting thing, right? So our overall number is 4.5 fatalities per 100,000, so double those countries, right? But if you actually go and look at what they do and what we do, it's actually not that much difference, right? But here's the damning statistic, I reckon, right? We rank 18th out of 31 nations, right? So we got to do better. Simple as that. In all the cities in Australia, our rate is 2.2 deaths. So actually, in the cities, it's actually not that bad, right? And here's the shocking stat, right? In some parts of Australia, because it varies, it's as high as 28.
Yeah, it's scary. It's huge.
And that's mainly country areas. So I think I see the whole.
Yeah, but it's and you know, there's a couple of different things that go with that. So it's not necessarily country people dying on country roads. There is a bit of that as well, but Australia is so vast, and so you've got fatigue, but you've also got people not driving to the conditions, but then you've got the conditions as well. So yeah, the road, trying to keep up, the roads, you know, there's so much of it.
It's hard, because I know what you're saying, it's so big, and the problem is small population, it's hard to pay for it. But really, when I looked at the infrastructure and most of the speed limits, right, because it says Norway, because I asked it, oh, what does it do different to us? And it says, oh, they have relatively low speed limits. It's only 110 on the highways and 50 in urban areas. I was like, well, that's what we do. Cameras, strict rules. The other thing is they have a zero policy for any kind of alcohol, and they're very strict. Like if you get busted, caught drinking, like they'll just give you 12 months or 2 years off. They don't fuck around. But the big difference, the main thing that they do that we don't, is that they start the driver training like in high schools. Yeah, I could actually tell you what it says. But the interesting thing is too, right, you can't get any kind of L's until you're 18.
Yeah.
So it's a bit more prolonged, and they start, like all the high schools have skid pans, and they start them at like 14, 15, and it's only literally like a period a week, and then it builds up.
Yeah.
And then once they turn 17, they can do this test, which goes for like 17 hours. It's like, and it's part, it's made up of part practical, part theory, and all the rest of it. So I was thinking, but how do we, like, man, it's easy for me to sit here and say, oh, Lisa, you need to get private training.
It's a huge thing, but I do think, we're doing it better than we used to. I came in, I got my license a little bit later, not too late, but I had turned 18 by the time I got my license, but which means I came into the new system when they had the hours that you had to build up. It was 25 back then, but most of my friends hadn't gone through that system, and you've got to. My son turns 16. In April, so we're just about to start on this journey, and he's one of the youngest in his cohort, so lots of his friends are doing it as well, and so I'm just about to start on that journey, and it scares me. It's a whole new kettle of fish. I mean, his best mate just had a car accident, and he's fine, but as a parent, starting to scare the crap out of us.
As you know, my son's 17, and like, I just try not to think about it, Lisa. And like the first few times they go in cars with anybody else, any other kind of driver, like freaked me the fuck out. But I was like, you just got to deal with it. But yeah, because the thing is, that kid that probably had the crash, right? So that's probably the first time that he's ever been in a car that was out of control. Now imagine if that was the 30th time.
Yeah.
He probably saves it.
Yep. Yep. No, and I think
we've got to slowly, I reckon, up the training, because this is the other thing I would say, right? If cars were invented today, right, who would we get to teach the people to drive? Qualified driving instructors or parents, right? I actually reckon one of the first things the government could do is just make lessons mandatory. Yep. So you have to have, and because imagine what we'll do for the driver training market, right? Like friend of mine that went to school, Mia, she now works with what's your name, Ledger, down at the airport there. They own the business together with McRae, and they do advanced driver training. And I just think, like, what could it could do for them if it was compulsory? I think that would be a good start. What do you reckon? Yeah,
definitely. And I also think, you know, mandatory country driving is a part of your thing as well, because if you've only driven at 50 k's an hour, sure, you might have your five, you know, your 50 hours, or I'm not sure what it is at the moment. But if that's just driving, you know, from, you know, Fremantle to Warwick and back again a million times, it's, yeah, it's point and shoot.
Yeah, because my son would tell you, if you go and get him now, he'll say, oh, do they, I ask him, are they teaching you to drive or are they teaching you to pass a test? He'll say, teaching you to pass a test.
Yeah. Yeah. Luckily only once, but the first time I lost control of a vehicle as well, and it was out in the country, gravel road, took the corner too fast, into the ditch. And it's so easy to do. And I'm, you know, I've been a reasonably good driver, but inexperienced. I didn't, you know, I, taking that corner on not a gravel road wouldn't have been an issue.
Well, the other thing is, you know, a tree in the wrong place and no more release it. Yeah, and look, it happens. Takes. And like, it shocked me, the country numbers.
Oh, and when you know, I've lived through it, and it's, you know, it's your neighbours going to these acts. You know, it's traumatic. But in the country, I mean, I know three people who've been, and all my age, who'd, as teenagers or young adults, were the drivers, and where they'd lost a, where, you know, they were the driver in a vehicle where they lost a friend, or in some cases multiple friends. Every second or third family has lost a child, and it is, it's inexperience. There's a bit of fatigue, but it is the, you know, the country roads, and you can, you, when you think you're invincible, and the hills are probably, you know, is overrepresented as well. When you think you're invincible, you know, on Albany Highway is a very, on, you know, in the city on Albany Highway is a very different scenario. And it, yeah, if there's a tree there, it's game over. And if there's not, you might go into a fence and, you know, go home to your parents.
Yeah, and it's just something I feel like as a society we could do better. It's like easy numbers, really. And like in the cities, right, actually not too bad. Like world's best practice. And this is what I mean, like most things I figure, you know, I just wonder why politicians don't at least start with that. Just at least start with world's best practice and then, you know, go from there kind of thing. Because, and, you know, you've got AI now and it's just such, I don't know, we seem to do things like ask about, and it's mainly only because that's the way things have been done, you know. So a couple more quick things and then we'll start wrapping up. So one thing I did want to ask you about too, right, so what other thing is Kalamunda, right? So I'd be interested to know your thoughts, like what, you know, could be done, and maybe like we'll touch on the McDonald's development and you know, what could be done to improve Kalamunda, because here's a couple of things, right? So on these toxic Hills forums, which I removed myself from this week when they started deleting my, I put the Matt one up and they deleted it, so I don't do censorship. The other thing is I don't need them, Lisa. And are you going to have a better day being on that group or a better day without that group? You're going to have a better day without it. So anyway, but there's been a lot of comment on there about it. And one of the things I think that people are missing, which actually Adam, to his credit, brought up, is I think what this shows is just a general lack of direction. Right, because if you ask AI, right, I was asking AI this morning, what do you think about McDonald's in Kalamunda? Super interesting. It talks about all the positives, employment, all that. Then it talks about the negatives. And it says more traffic, more congestion, more litter, more noise. Generally, when a McDonald's opens in an area, it affects local businesses. Their revenue, like, goes down. So I'm sort of trying to, not really the McDonald's thing, but your thoughts on the bigger picture of, like, because a lot of people complain too, right? So, you know, one of the arguments with the McDonald's thing, right, is, oh, Kalamunda's dead. It's never growing. You know, every second shop's empty. Man, incorrect, Lisa.
We can't get an early polling station because they can't find somewhere for,
that's right,
for the WAC to go.
I've lived in Kalamunda, right, since 1987. Auto One used to be in a little shop where Jack and Jill's was. Now look at Auto One.
My husband calls it the TARDIS. You don't realise how big it is until you walk in there. It's great.
There's one or two empty shops in the mall where the markets are, right? But Zamburos have moved in and, you know, there's others like coming. Like if you actually, I drove around, I did a lap around yesterday. I couldn't find any empty shops, right? But here's the thing. I don't know if McDonald's kind of suits Kalamunda, right? But then what, this is what I'm saying, what does Kalamunda actually really stand for? What do you think about all that?
Yeah, I think I'm ambivalent about whether or not it needs a McDonald's. I see both sides of the story. My main thing for that is that it should be the community's decision. It should be up to the Shire. They should, you know, this should not be going to the JDAP, through the JDAP process. That whole process needs changing. And I think one of the things that's really important is Kalamunda is unique, and the people who live here know that. And so there should be a, you know, that community consultation. I do think we've got a new CEO started about 6 months ago. I've been really enjoying engaging with him and the new thought processes he's bringing and the new ideas and the fresh plans that he's bringing along. So I'm really interested to see how that goes, and, you know, what we can go from there.
I think fresh eyes.
Yeah. And just a different way of looking at things. And I think we've, you know, we still, you know, we're a city now, and some, and lots of people don't even like that. We still have a small town mentality. But I think our biggest, you know, our biggest draw card or the thing that we need is our tourism. I mean, the Bickley Valley should be the destination of choice. You know, some people can go to the Swan Valley, that's fine. But we've got Swan Valley, but we've got hills. We're prettier.
Yeah.
You know, we've got.
I tell people, right, one of my lines is I say, because when the people say, oh, what's Bickley like? I say, it's like the Swan Valley 20 years ago.
Yes, but with views. But better. Yeah, it's and
oh,
and
within 3K's drive of here, there's 15 wineries open actually today, because it's a weekend. There's 15 wineries plus all the other places.
Yeah, oh, it's amazing, and it is still largely unspoiled, but it is growing. The Chamber of Commerce here in Kalamunda do an amazing job, and they're going to keep growing the Bickley Harvest Festival and those kind of things. But that's, I think, you know, that town centre, that you know, tourist attraction is what I think we need to be looking at and making, you know, destination of choice. And I don't think a McDonald's fills that gap. I do lament I am on those pages. I try to I'm there for the comments. Although, funnily enough, you're talking about AI. I was going to mention before, somebody asked on one of these chats, shout out to whoever it was, they asked AI to roast the Perth Hills. And it was hilarious. It's, you know, you did a couple of all the different towns, like it, yeah, and it was just freaking hilarious.
It would actually be pretty easy to do.
Yes, yeah. AI's got a sense of humour.
It's definitely got its own unique
yes
thing. And, like, you know what I reckon those people on those pages, they take these jobs on, right, but they don't really have the time for the admin, because if you go read the rules, right, they'll say, like, no hateful comments and stuff. Mate, it's just full of fucking hateful comments.
Oh, man.
I think what happens is they just don't have the time to do the job properly. They like the power, but they don't want to put in the work.
Yeah. And the internet's a horror. It can be a horrible place.
So how do we tap into the tourism thing better then? Because I agree with you with McDonald's, right? And I think, look, if you must have it, this is my view, if you must have it, that's okay, but probably not where they want to put it. Like, to me...
Yeah. Like the location doesn't
the location,
make it,
put it somewhere within the main street or up near Coles, the main... Where the traffic...
Knock over the old Mead Medical and put a McDonald's there.
100%. Something like that. I'm not particularly against it. But, yeah, how do you reckon we tap into it, right? And here's an idea I want to throw at you. I mean, look, I haven't looked into it at all, so I've got no idea how much it would cost. But here's a perfect example that I see, right? The old zigzag railway. Now, what you said about Kalamunda is unique, right? So I think what we should be doing is tapping into things that no one else has got, right? Example, opening up Mundaring Weir for fishing, hiking. That's a whole nother.
I saw you commenting on that post, yes.
Of federal sitting members message me about that. That's a whole nother podcast. We won't go down that. But that, but there's a perfect example, right? And it's not just Mundaring. There's four within this seat. And you're looking at a lot of money for the economy. But here's the thing, right? So I thought the Zigzag Railway. Now, I looked into railways, right? The main cost of making it is actually the base. Well, that's already there.
Yeah.
So all you got to do is some kind of light rail. Now, imagine if you could get tourists and you could come to the bottom of the hill there somewhere via Midland, catch a train to Midland or whatever, and then get a shuttle. And then you come up, because part of the problem with Midland, like that top section is actually really cool, along the library, the old pioneer stuff, and then the cafe and all that. Imagine if that's where you're pulling up. You know, and could you imagine? And
There is a proposal out there. I've seen a business case for it.
The pipeline for the water up north, I hear it, it gets rolled out every few years. But I was thinking, you know what, to me, that just seemed like a really cheap way of, you know, really tapping into something. And look, I've seen so many things, right, and people will like poo-poo it. You actually would be shocked at like what one little thing like that can actually do to a place. And I could actually give you plenty of examples, like especially, you know, a lot of, I've traveled a lot. I used to have a job where I go over east, you know, a lot, and I got to see, you know, the way places were managed over there. It's a lot different. And, you know, you probably saw as well, there was reports over the long weekend of all the ferals down at Harvey Dam. So now they're going to shut it down, rah, rah. Well, a couple of things, right? No policing and open points of access, right? So example, when I go fishing over East Leesla, so I go to Hinds Dam or some of these other big dams, right? So you get a pin. There's a pin number on the gate. So I book online, I get a pin for the campsites. The gate opens, I go in, like you can go in and out whenever you want. There's a camera there. It's all set up so that, you know, they know who's coming and going. The ranger comes around every evening, right? The other thing is the ranger's house is in a position where he can see the water. Like just small things like that. But you go to Hinds Dam, right? 500,000 people visit there every year. You won't find litter, right? And a few small things like no power boats, catch and release fishing, sail only. A few small management things make a big difference. So anyway, I got off the track there. But, yeah, what do you think, you know, about the Zigzag Railway? Do you think that's got some kind of merit? Because I reckon we need 10 of them.
Ideas.
If you put all them things together, then all of a sudden, wow.
Yeah, and there's just, I suppose, with those kind of things, there's got to be, you know, a will behind it. People, you know, we do have a fair bit of the not in my backyard out here, and people don't necessarily like change, and I suppose you've got to be able to look at it within keeping within the environment. So my grandparents built in Gooseberry Hill in 74. So I've been, you know, in the area. The Zigzag was a huge, huge part of my life, you know, between the Zigzag.
This is what I mean. Because of the behaviour of a few, now it's shut.
Yeah, which is sad.
We've got to get away from that attitude of shunning it for everybody.
Because there's a couple of idiots who can't contain themselves.
Sorry to cut you off.
No, it is. But that's over government, you know, that where, you know, you don't like to talk about the nanny state, but geez, it is getting an awful lot that way. Mm-hmm. There's making, as you said, making things safe and not hurting people, but ruining, you know, things that people should be able to do because one dickhead can't behave himself isn't how we should be. But look, putting a train up the Zigzag, I'm not sure. I have to see the business case before.
Yeah,
but I do think that I like the, you know, the ideas sound, and we need those points of difference, because that's how you get that's how you get people to come for a trip up the hill. We had my husband's 50th a couple of years ago, and some of his friends came, and because there's no accommodation, had to stay in an Airbnb, so stayed three nights. And they said they had no idea the Bickley Valley was even there. And now they come back, you know, every couple of months, and they're bringing more of their friends. They just didn't know that what was out there. And so, you know, there's the marketing of that kind of thing. But then you want to find that balance too, because you don't want to be saying, you know,
there's nothing to see up here.
You don't want to become over commercialized. you know, you want to keep that unique identity of what we are, and you know that when you go to you know, whether it's you're going to Plume Estate and the guys who are making, you know, the guy that's serving you is actually the guy that owns it and is making the wine, because that's, you know, you love those sort of stories, and you, that's what, but people have to also be able to make a living, and so you need it to be viable as well.
And therein lies the work for you guys, finding that
balance. Yep. And but the, you know, people, if you let people generally will try to work hard and do the right thing.
100%. Yeah, and this is where, like, honestly, it's I've so enjoyed this conversation, because it gives my little, you know, I'm getting to the point at least where, like, I want to live somewhere else because of the over-regulation, because it affects my life that much. And you can see, like, how passionate about it I am. And, yeah, you know, I'll tell you what, it brings joy to my little fucking soul to hear, you know, this new batch, I'm calling you the new batch, to, you know, speak like this, because you just don't realise, like, people that came before you, how different it was. And it was just, you know, we just basically just got told to fuck off. And, you know, it's like, you know, the state land down there, I tell the story, right? So, you know, Robin Hood, right? The king locked up the forest and said to the people, you're not allowed to shoot any of the deer, they're my deer. So Robin Hood shoots the deer, gives the deer to the people to feed the deer, right? We laugh at that. How stupid are they? Lisa, there's a sign just down the road there that tells me, basically says, fuck off. Because it's water catchment, I can't go in there hunting, I can't go fishing, right? But look at a map of the seat of Bullwinkle and look at the strip mining on the lower section of the scar. Like, they're allowed to do that, but I'm not allowed to go down the water. And so, yeah, anyway, so yeah, I really appreciate this conversation, because I'm slowly coming back around to, like, you know, because on the top side, like I said, I'm a libertarian, and, you know, after COVID, when they passed the emergency laws and, you know, saying on now that they can enter people's homes without warrants, like, when that shit starts going down in Australia, like, I'm out, you know. And I think that from the bad comes the good, and we've had the bad, and now, like, I'm really super excited to, like, see what happens and to see who gets in, because honestly, I don't think it's going to matter too much who wins. I think roughly, give or take a bit, most of the new batch are on the same page. And so, yeah, I just wanted to thank you, because people like you are not that common. And to put yourself out there the way that you do, like, it's not an easy path to travel.
No, it's different. And yeah, I think I've just always, I've always had a voice. It's the best thing that I've got, and it's, you know, I like to use it to help those who don't, because not everyone is comfortable speaking out or speaking up or being able to advocate for themselves. And I've been blessed with that, the confidence to do that, and that's what, you know, that's why I'm here.
One thing I want to finish on, one thing I've realised, like, after today and doing a couple of others, is that the key to most things, like I said, is communication. And women communicate better.
We use more words, we're told.
This is one of the most enjoyable ones I've done. When I was at high school, right, I always used to go sit with the girls, because I am a free thinker, and I tend, like, you know, the boys back then, they're interested in poo jokes and titties, you know what I mean? And I was like, I was never that
kind of person.
So I'd go sit with the girls, because I always found you get a much better conversation with the girls, because they'll just be way more honest. They'll cut to the chase better. And when it comes to communication and those sort of skills, I think, honestly, that you guys are leading the pack. So thank you very much
for
your
time
today. And I wish you well. And before you go, just wait there. I've got a little prezi for you. So everyone that comes, I try within season to give them, I call this like a This is our family sort of like in a tray.
Oh, awesome. Thank you so very much. That's lovely.
So
we've
that's
got
all picked, 100%.
Oh, we need some, we're out of fresh chilies as well. That's great. Thank you.
I can't claim these, but these are my friends that she lives around the corner.
Oh, yes.
But she does like all the heritage.
Oh, yeah, proper, yes. Proper awesome. Eggs. Yeah, we haven't been back to, we haven't haven't had a Bruce Rock trip recently, so I'm out of eggs and I'm loath to buy them. So
there you go. I'll put them there
for you. Yes, yeah, thank you.
And then I'll take you through that actually. So these are all, these are like old heritage tomatoes.
Oh, yes.
These are beetroot.
We've got poo tomatoes growing in our yard at the moment. We're not sure how they got there.
They're the best ones.
The dog must have sorted them out. The tree's amazing. We're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, and you can eat these as well, right? Yeah. The best way I find, they're only little ones, so grated, just raw. And they make like a nice salad for tacos.
Yep.
And then that's just our homegrown garlic.
Homegrown garlic. Like amazing.
So, yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. Western supremacy, intense chemistry. They expect the list when we sound the list. Western supremacy, intense chemistry. Best be aware. Western supremacy, supremacy. Let's get it on. Intense chemistry. Western supremacy, intense chemistry. Best be aware. New blood starting to drip. Intense chemistry, they expect the list when we sound the list. Western supremacy, intense chemistry. Best be aware. Western supremacy, supremacy. Let's get it on. Intense chemistry, Western supremacy, intense chemistry. Best be aware, new blood starting to.